When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to worship at the altar of music and comedy. The giddiness and the harmony of a well-crafted comedy song brings great joy in abundance. Join the tinkling talents of David Thames and me, Phil Nickel. Sit back, turn it up, and enjoy Songs in the Key of Laugh.
Oh, I can't believe I hit that note.
I'm still impressed.
I don't know if I could do that again, but if there are any West End producers listening, I sing like that all the time. My name is Phil Nickel.
And I'm David Timms.
And you're listening to Songs in the Key of Laugh. It's the final episode of Series 2. In fact, it's the bonus episode. We've had the final episode. We've had the 10th episode. This is our bonus episode where we talk about this comedy song contest and all that stuff. But we want to thank our listeners.
We do want to thank you.
We do.
Yes, the people whose ears we are in at this moment in time.
We have a great group of regular listeners, and we really appreciate it. It makes this worth doing for us, and we hope that you're enjoying it, and we're loving your feedback. So thank you to the listeners, but also thanks to the guests. We've had some amazing guests. We started with Adam Buxton,
one of my favorite people in the world.
We've had Earl Oaken and Izzy Suti, but we also had Cunt and the Gang, who have just recently, very recently, gone to
I think they made it to number one in like the download charts.
Yeah.
But they had at one point they had like 10 remixes in the top 20 on one of these on the indie chart.
I believe the song kept getting taken down by Spotify as well.
Yeah.
And so they kept doing remixes to have the song go back up just because, so you could see the title of it in the charts and the it wasn't played on any, had it no airplay, but comedy songs don't get much better than this. It's the Prince Andrew is a sweaty dance.
Yeah.
And so that the controversy on the Jubilee weekend, I mean, it's political, it's straight to the heart, it's from the heart. So thanks to Cutting the Gang. But also other guests we had on, we had Jude Pearl, we had Huge Davis, we had your friend
Lily Phillips.
And I know there was more people, and I can't remember them all now, but thank you to all our guests. Thanks to Acast for housing the podcast. It's the home of podcasting. It's the home of comedy podcasting.
But now, while you're thanking people, Phil,
yeah,
I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping.
Yeah. Well, before you get to that,
why don't we give
the biggest thanks to our producer, James Ingley?
We probably should.
Yeah.
I do love James.
We do. We love James. I wouldn't be sitting right here, right now without James Ingley.
Where would you be sitting?
Just about an inch to the left. But thanks, James.
Thank you so much, James.
Now, yes, I did make a faux pas on the last episode where I announced the winner, Ashley Freeze, as the winner of the Musical Comedy Awards. And it wasn't Ashley Freeze. And Ashley very kindly sent us a missive saying, guys, it wasn't me, but I appreciate the plug. But the winner of the Musical Comedy Awards, which is a fantastic organization and a fantastic competition, something that if you are a musical comedian, you should get involved in. But the winner of last year's Musical Comedy Awards was Jeff Japerds.
Yes, not Ashley Freeze.
Yeah.
It was Jeff Japerds. Now, Jeff is fantastic.
Jeff is one of our favorites.
And but he is not Ashley Freeze.
He's not. They have nothing in common. I mean, they do have something in common. They're both musical comedy performers. And handsome.
Oh, so handsome.
So handsome. But that's the Musical Comedy Awards, which is a competition, not to be confused with our contest.
Which is also a competition.
It's a contest. It's our comedy song contest. And we're going to be announcing the winners of that later in this episode.
This is the episode. This is the one you've been waiting for.
Yeah.
We will find out who wins the grand prize.
Yeah, and you're also going to be hearing our final interview of Series 2 with fascinating Aida, which was...
They're so good and they're such wonderful people. We got to do that interview with them in person,
yeah,
and then saw their show. And we were crying. It was beautiful.
You know, I mean, we say all manner manner of shite on stage that we'd never be allowed to say anywhere else, you know, because we're singing it in three-part harmony. We're three delightful-looking ladies of un certain âge wearing very nice outfits.
Mine is very subtle.
You know, who with very nice accents, who speak well and use a lot of words. And people go, oh, my God, did they just say that?
That's fascinating, Aida, and they're going to be coming up later in the show. But first, the Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song competition. We had great submissions. Like, coming right out of the shoots, we had Shed Jam's Funky Munch, which was just like a funk soul song about food. We had another...
quite a few about aging and older people. We had the Grandma's Story. We had White Pube as well.
And then we had things like Butt Lift Bossa Nova by Solfa Carlisle and Alison Arnott.
And we had one in from Ashley Freeze as well, another one about the older generation.
Ashley Freeze is getting a lot of time on this podcast.
He is getting a lot of time.
We should just get Ashley Freeze on the podcast.
We probably should, yeah.
One of my favorites was Venus, the John Witcher. Anyway, there's so many that we found it really hard to choose. But if you stay tuned, we're going to announce later in the episode who gets the big grand prize, the big 200 schmackaroonies. But first, we are going to play a short chat with last year's Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song contest winners. We're going to see how the award
has completely changed their lives.
That money must have really...
Oh, yes.
So here's our interview with the very funny Canadians in Space. The Canadians in Space, as we've just told you, were the winners of the inaugural Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song contest.
They were.
And with a great track called Only Next Door, which we loved.
Hello.
Hi.
And there's somebody else in the background as well. Who's that?
That's Young John.
So you're there as a three, but you're a band. Where are you guys from?
We're from Barnsley, South Yorkshire. There's two of us do the songwriting, and then John joins us for live. So he's the drummer, glockenspiel, bit of bass, all sorts of stuff, and lots of vocals.
That's great. So how long have you guys been together?
We've been together a long time as friends and in bands, but we've just been doing comedy, in inverted commas, since about 2017. I think we did BBC New Comedy Awards, so we got a live thing together for that, and that's when we started doing live stuff.
Have you been writing songs as friends for a long time? Is it something that you guys have brought you together, or did you start writing them after you were friends?
No, probably about the same time, really. Sort of became friends and then started writing through a mutual interest.
We're just a bit strange, and we need an excuse to be friends, so it were music.
It's just like us, actually. It's funny how these things happen.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. So, and when you're writing your songs, does one of you do the lyrics? Does one of you do the words? How does it work?
It's a mixture of both, really. Sometimes one of us will have more of a song than another, and then other times we just write from scratch together, and we usually chip in both with the lyrics and the music. But it does vary from song to song.
You play out live quite a lot as well, don't you? I see on all of your socials that that you're playing like most weekends. You can go and see you guys play.
Yeah, we try and do a lot of live stuff. If we get right venue, it's good. If not, people laugh at us for a different reason.
What sort of venues like this comedy music? What kind of places?
Smaller venues, so like smaller pubs and things are good because people can actually hear what you're singing. I think if you're in a bigger place, it's, you know, we're not especially kind of interesting as a musical thing for people to just listen as background. So it's better when it's a smaller venue and people can listen and hopefully laugh.
Now, let me ask you guys something. You're not Canadians.
No,
and we're not from space.
I just want to ask you, you won the inaugural Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song contest, and how has it changed your life?
It took me ages to get in the room because of my head. I mean, we're better off.
You had a nice meal.
And we can adorn all our flyers and posters with winners of the
we'll put it on everything.
Song competition. Yeah. Contest.
Oh yeah, please do.
And absolutely. Every time and did you spend the money on anything? Anything in particular that's fancy?
Well, we're saving up to do an album, so it's much appreciated for that.
Yeah,
we're in the middle of recording an album.
Fantastic. Yeah.
If you need any backing vocals, yeah, David is a great singer. Well,
young John's upset now. He normally does backing.
I've also got my own Glockenspiel, John, so watch your back, mate.
The song itself, Only Next Door, is I loved it. I loved the story. Where did it come from?
Well, I think it started out initially. The initial idea was just logging on to somebody else's Wi-Fi. Yeah. Without permission, and then it just took a dark twist and went a bit more Alfred Hitchcock from there.
Yeah, it is rather Hitchcockian though, as it just twists, slowly twists and becomes ever more demented. Yeah. Well, we're so happy to have you guys enter and submit your song to the contest and to have awarded you the prize. You know, I know it's going to take you on to big, huge things.
Oh, absolutely massive. I mean, I know you were saying about big venues, you know, and that maybe they don't get the same thing. But when Wembley call, I'm just going to say a bit of take it. Because it'll definitely be worth it.
Yeah.
Well, so we do introduce it as an award-winning song every time we play it now, so.
Yay! Well, it is an award-winning song, and we're going to hear it live here right now on Songs in the Key of Laugh. This is the Canadians in Space and their award-winning number, Only Next Door.
While you're away, I'll look after your home. It's really no trouble as I'm only next door. I'll put out your bins and I'll jet wash your drive. Keep an eye on your greenhouse, close your curtains at night.
My phone's been on flight mode, I've just got your text. There's no need to worry, it's fine. It's incredibly nice, but you don't have a key. My mother will see things arise.
I've had a word with your mother and I told her I'd help. It's really no trouble, there's a mole next door. It was hard to convince her, but I now have your key. She didn't look well, and so I phoned her GP.
Is my mother alright? Do you still have my key? There's no need to go into my house. It's the least of my worries that my curtains are drawn. I'll be booking the next flight out.
Well, I've tidied your garage, I've defrosted your fridge. I've oiled your bike chain and I've treated your fence. I've cut down the trees that were blocking the light. Kept an eye on your greenhouse, closed your curtains last night.
Did you not get my text? Is my mother alright? I'm struggling to book on a flight. I'm increasingly worried. Did you get my voicemail? I'm beginning to lose my mind.
My mind. Your mother got worse and she called out for you. So I shaved off my mustache and dressed in your suit. I told her I loved her as I sat by her side. She thought I was you at the moment she died.
She died.
She died. Well, I buried your mother and I cried all your tears. I put out your bins and I've jet washed your drive. I'll make us a cake and a nice pot of tea. Oh, I can be mother now. It's just you and me. 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 It's really no trouble as I'm only next door.
Yeah!
Canadians in Space!
Thank you so much, the Canadians in Space. Jeez, thanks, Adam. Thanks, Lee. Thank you, John. And the Glockenspiel was amazing back there, by the way. Thanks for submitting your song and taking part in our podcast and supporting the podcast. And hopefully we can meet up in London sometime and share a beer or have a drink together.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks very much for having us. Yeah, we'll send you an album.
Please do. I'd love to hear that. Please do.
When you send the album, we'll put it on the podcast for sure.
Absolutely. So, listeners, we have been promising that we are going to get the musical Monsoon, which we've been writing over the last 10 episodes. We've been promising that we're going to get it out to you, and we still are. We promise we are still going to get you that episode.
If you've been following the whole series, you know that David and I have been writing a musical each, a dictionary musical each week. We put our finger in the dictionary, pick out a word, and then we're trying to twist it into a narrative, which I think we've done.
We have, yeah. And so we've spent the last couple of weeks filling the plot holes, which there were quite a few. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been on tour.
You've been in Poland with the Amy Winehouse band.
I have, and you've been going abroad and doing gigs left, right, and centre.
Yes, and I was recording a radio sitcom, Andrew O'Neill's new radio sitcom called Damned Andrew, which will be out at the end of June.
Fantastic.
I play a great part.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I look forward to hearing it. So basically, guys, we are sorry. It is on its way. We are going to do a bonus episode.
Big bonus.
Which is going to be big bonus.
I'm sitting here with a big bonus.
I thought you were going to go there, yeah. So that big bonus episode, not bonus episode, is going to be coming to you shortly.
Get your mind out of the gutter, David.
You put it there. So yes, for that episode, you will just have to wait a little bit longer. But I think that kind of brings us to what this episode is all about, Phil.
What's that?
This episode is about the comedy song competition.
Contest. We had so many awesome submissions for the comedy song contest this series, and we're about to announce the runners-up and the winner of that contest.
Goodness, it's
and
so exciting.
I'm trembling.
Ooh, your knees actually are.
I am trembling.
Yeah.
So let's get right to it. The second runner-up in the Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song contest for Series 2 is, drumroll please, The Ballad of Derek and Dorothy by Danny Malone.
Derek loves Dorothy. Dorothy loves Derek. Derek and Dorothy, they're in love. Dorothy thinks Derek.
And what a beautiful song it was.
It was. Well done, Danny Malone.
Danny Malone wins £50.
Whee!
Woohoo! Right, well, now our first runner-up, who also wins £50.
Drumroll, please.
Okay.
And the winner is
Casual Fling by Rosalind Miller and Yasmin Lukowski.
Woo!
Woohoo!
Congratulations, Rosalind and Yasmin. You are the first runner-up in the Songs in the Key of Laugh comedy song contest, which brings us to the announcement of the winner for Series 2. Who is it? How about a really long...
Really long,
really
drum,
long drum roll, please. And the winner is... Did It! By Eddie Johnson. Eddie takes away our grand prize of $200.
And here, it's pounds. And here is the song.
Hello there. Welcome to this song and its topic. Although once it's started, you prefer to stop it. Like a horror you glued to, you can't retreat. Like car crash viewing, you won't leave your seat. Like Corbyn in a disco, Trump in a mankini, Dolores Umbridge popping round for tea, Jimmy Carr's laugh on a loop for all time, non-stop repeats of Last of the Summer Wine. It's a truth, a reality that dawns on us all when we brush under the rug and try to ignore. But there's no holding back, you just need to admit that once upon a time, your parents did it. Yeah, they did it, they did it. It's simple and it's true. And the evidence that they did it is standing in your shoes. Yeah, they did it more than just one time. And now that mental image is firmly planted in your mind. You have tried to ignore it, try to fight, but it's like your nan trying to play Fortnite. It's ingrained like a trench in the ground. I don't want to cross it, but there's no way around. Once upon a time, your mum and dad met, whether love at first sight or to settle a bet. And although it might make your skin shudder, they definitely bumped uglies with each other. Not boots, got down, went all the way, no matter how you say it. The meaning's the same. I'm sorry to raise it and make you confront the horror we all try to run from. Yeah, they did it, they did it, and the proof of the pudding is you. Your parents did some smushing and probably enjoyed it too. Yeah, they did it, but don't feel so repulsed, cause everybody else's folks did too. We're all just the biological results. So take your hands off your ears and open your eyes. It's not like this should come as a massive surprise. You didn't just appear like some magician's trick. Your mum just got too close to your dad's emotions. Yeah, they did it, just face the facts and find that mental image just permanently scarred inside your mind. Yeah, they did it, but here's a thought on which to dwell. That 'cause your parents did, we know, your nan and granddad did as well.
That was Did It.
Bidey Johnson, the winner of the second series of Songs in the Key of Laugh Comedy Song Contest.
It's a competition!
It's a contest! And we're going to get in touch with Eddie and the runners-up, with Roslyn and Danny, and we're going to send you your cash prizes!
Woohoo! Fantastic!
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Over the course of the second series, we've been so lucky to talk to so many fabulous guests and talk about their songwriting, their worlds in comedy, their likes, their dislikes, and get to know them a little more personally. And our final interview of the series is no different. We spoke to fascinating Aida.
The guest on today's show is someone you might know. And if you don't, that's your own fault. But you'll know them soon.
You boy, you will.
This jingle has been personalized for a guest that we hope that you recognize. And this week their name is Insert Name Here.
We're sitting with fascinating Aida in where are we? St. Albans.
St. Albans. St. Arena.
St. Albans Arena. This is the final episode or the bonus episode of our second season, and it's an honor to have you guys. We've got Dilly Keen, we've got Liza Pullman, and we've got Adele Anderson, and you guys are fascinating. So thanks for joining us.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I'm extremely excited.
David's excited.
my partner is an opera singer, and she's been in Phantom of the Opera. She's currently in. She's currently on maternity leave.
She's a pro.
She's absolutely amazing, and she said, "Make sure." So I'm going to get it in now. If any of you ever need to go off sick, she will jump in, but she doesn't play the piano. Yes, now she said. No, but we're both huge fans, and we sing your songs merrily.
Did you train classically, Dan?
Yes, to an extent.
He's very good.
Did you go to music college? Look at me now asking the questions.
No, I didn't go to music college. I left school and then started playing jazz and then everything changed. And I learned that I could, you know, live and earn a very little amount of money doing it. So
the rest is history.
Absolutely.
What instrument do you play?
I'm principally a piano player, but I play many and I do lots of musical direction.
So, he plays the recorder. You're very good.
Very badly, but I can just about play two at the same time.
We've both been writing comedy songs for many years, but this act that we're speaking to goes back to like 1902. It feels that long.
Yeah, it does. It's 1983. It's 39 years. Yeah, 40 years
next year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I was in a group called Corky and the Juice Pigs, and which.
God, I remember that.
Yeah. And we go back, and I remember because I think I met you many years ago. You may not remember with Karen Corn. Karen Corn. Yeah. And I think the first time I may have seen you would have been in the original Gilded Balloon when it was down on the Cowgate before it burned down.
Yes.
So it must have been, I'm trying to think of where it would have been.
It would have been the Assembly Rooms Music Room.
Assembly Hall, right, Assembly Rooms. I mean, back in those days, were you regulars at the Edinburgh Fringe?
Yes, I mean, we started going up there in 84, and I think we went up every year till 89, then we broke...
Well, you actually went there in 83, didn't you? I went there in 73.
I'm so old.
No, but I mean, with Fascinating Aida, you were... In a tent on a hole
in a tent in the hole in the ground.
Where's the hole in the ground?
It's where the Traverse is now. There was a big hole in the ground. And it rained and rained that year, and it was a sea of mud, and you had to wear Wellingtons to get from the dressing room to the stage. Wow. And we were holding our high heels in our hands and picking our way, or rather, sloshing our way through the...
And who was in the group then, Dilly?
It was Marilyn Cutts and Lizzie Richardson. Mm-hmm.
The very beginnings.
I remember seeing... I went to... this is sort of a digression, but I saw... Dame Shirley Bassey at Glastonbury, and it was one year, it was very muddy, and she had these boots. She had these like boots with like sequin, her name down the side,
green
sequins, pink, glorious boots that went all the way down. I thought, that's just what a way for a dame to get on stage.
What a way for a boot to go for a button.
My first year in Edinburgh was 1990 with the Juice Pigs, and we played the Gilded Balloon, the backstage at the Gilded Balloon. It's changed a lot. You went up in 2016, were you there to
film so.
In the new and in that wonderful tent, the Spiegel tent.
Did a Spiegel tent, and we've done the big purple elephant and things like that. When you've been as many times as we have, it sort of goes into a bit of a blur.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm the same, yeah.
But I remember the early years. Well,
the reason I bring it up is because I remember one of the things, you know, not that you've started long before me, but one of the things I remember about it is that comedy and musical comedy and cabaret and musical comedy had a much deeper connection to the alternative comedy scene, which is now sort of mainly stand-up. But at the time, when you went to see a bill of people, you'd go and see, you'd see a musical act, and you'd see someone that juggles or does something, or a bit of weird magic. You'd see Jerry Sadovich doing some weird magic, and then you'd see the Tiger Lilies and a political comedian. And that's kind of what I remember, or if I'm not mistaken, that's sort of...
Well, that's how it was on the London cabaret scene at Jongleurs.
Right.
Had a very much a mixed bill.
Yes, yeah, but when we started going up, though, we always had our own. That was only if you were sort of asked to do a night of cabaret,
right.
To go and sell your act. You do two songs and then you.
But also, there was in the program there wasn't a dedicated cabaret section, was there?
No, we were in comedy.
Yeah.
All music. We were never really comfortable in either.
Yes.
Did you play that comedy circuit? From looking into the background, you very much were invited to Edinburgh and came out of your own bubble. Were you creating stuff separately, or were you?
It's to a certain extent. We did play Jongleurs. That was one of our first ever gigs, we were a regular for a while on that circuit, the Hemingford Arms. and that place in South London where they throw coins.
The Tunnel
Club. Yes. The Tunnel Club, right? Like the Ball and Banana was one.
No, we never went to the Ball and Banana.
The Earth Exchange was one.
Do you remember the Earth Exchange? Yeah. The most they'd throw was some rolled oats or something. Yeah. But that, we were on that little circuit for a while. And then because songs are infinitely repeatable in a way that jokes aren't. We had enough material for our own show quite quickly. Some of it was not very good, but it was kind of we performed it with enough gusto to make ourselves think it was all right. And so we started going out on tour with our own show within about a year and a half of our inception, really.
Mm. But by then, you'd already done quite a lot of TV and
yes, and we'd done the Dublin Theatre Festival as well, things like that. So, we then carved our own little niche and went into a backwater cul-de-sac called Fascinating Radio and never met anybody ever again.
This is why
backwater called
us. This is why I mentioned it. Well, no, I think success makes that happen. If you look around the walls in the Circle Bar where we are, all these acts, all these comedians, all the acts have played here, and Armstrong and Miller and Reg D, once you end up touring on your own, you don't really come in contact with many other people because you live in your own little touring bubble and write in your own touring bubble and pick up fans along the way. And it's interesting that you have survived. I don't even know, that sounds a bit rude almost, but it says a lot about your commitment to your craft that you continue to put on new shows, put on new tours, and continue to write. When you were a younger writer, were you don't laugh at me for saying that. I'm allowed to say that.
James is laughing.
James, the producer, is laughing. I meant when you were a teenager, when did you write your first comedy song?
I wrote a song at school called Swinging Little Muddletown on the Puddle Marsh when I was about 15. And it was a huge hit at school.
Was it rude?
No, I didn't know how to write a rude song then. It was really funny and fun and quite sweet. I had a great tune. And I thought that it wasn't funny so much as quirky. And everybody loved it. And people kept going, Swinging Little Muddletown. Not the Puddle Marsh. And it was about Devon village or Dorset village where everybody was dead. And it just made me laugh. And so I had a sort of a flair for the quirky.
Yeah.
Did you play the piano with when you wrote that song?
Guitar.
Guitar?
Yes.
So multi-instrumentalist.
For a short while. I have a guitar at home and I have a guitar lele. Both of which I pluck quietly to myself, and I haven't really got the confidence to do it on stage. Who knows or dares to dream? I might. I've played the mouse organ on stage.
Mm. Right.
Mm. Right. Yes, I can only play. I can play things that you can't play anymore, like Camp Town Races.
Right.
I can play campfire songs on the mouth organ. I can't play the blues at all.
Whilst wearing lipstick as well, that's quite.
I know, but if the lipstick then was worn all over my face.
Are you trained then? Did you have a musical family or a musical mum and dad?
No, my dad could play a tune in the right hand, but it always had the same notes in the left hand. It was dreadful. It was hard to listen to. People would say, "Oh, your father plays beautifully," and I'd go, "Really? Oh, God." Because everything was in the key of D, and he only had a D in the bass. he played, the whole of all the music from The Merry Widow on a D chord, which was really agony for me. My brother played the guitar for a bit. He played Bobby Shafto. And there was about an hour between chord changes. My sister Anne was very musical, and she sang, and she taught me to sing. Well, she loved. I sang before I spoke. Mum always said she thought it was a shame she'd never had a tape recorder, because I lay in my pram singing, and I was sort of weirdly musical, and I had two very musical grandmothers. And then I went to university to do music, and I flunked out because it was terribly academic and I hated it. And then I went to drama school.
Right. Where did you go in university? What university?
Trinity Dublin. And I remember saying to our professor, I said, are we ever going to study jazz? And he looked at me in absolute disgust and said, you really should have gone somewhere like York.
I really wanted to... I was taught classically as a kid, and I was desperate to play some jazz. And I said... please, can I play some jazz? And he said, well, I'll have a look at what I've got. And the next week he brought in Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams. And he said, here's some jazz. And I thought, I don't know if this guy's the right guy for me.
No, I don't think he was. Yeah. My mother used to say, play some jazz. And her idea of jazz was Charlie Kuntz. We had a recording of Charlie Kuntz playing the Harry Lime theme, which I occasionally trot out for Adele's amusement, which is... It's, you know, it's just that English sound which has absolutely no swing at all.
And how about you, Liza?
My mum's an actress, and my father was a very prolific writer for the BBC and for films and for TV. So I grew up in a very theatrical family, and I have an older sister, and my mum and my sister and I used to harmonise together in three-part harmony. In fact, I think my dad died when I was about 10, and I think my sister and I really sort of did our grieving by singing together, you know, in close harmony. And we had a sort of stack of 20s and 30s and 40s books that we used to sing. And so harmony was always a huge, hugely important part of my life. In fact, I told this story on stage last week that we used to sing in the car, and I vividly remember, because there's 6 years between me and my sister Corey, I vividly remember sort of moaning to my mum because my sister had stolen my harmony, and my mum saying to me, well, find another. And I think that is how I learned to harmonise, because there's always another line to be found, you just have to look for it. Mm-hmm. So when I joined FA, I mean, I then had a very circuitous route. I went to music college rather than to drama school, although I'd always wanted to be an actress, but I went to Guildhall because I thought I could sing, and I thought that there's a great drama course there, and I thought, well, I'll be able to marry the two. And of course, in those days, certainly there was no such thing as a marriage between the drama course and the music department. So 6 years later, I emerged as a fully fledged opera singer. I went to Glyndebourne and was with Opera North and worked at the Royal Opera House and E&O and all of those places. But I was always had Fats Waller in my blood, not Puccini. So so in the end, I stepped away from that and did a little kind of danced a bit with West End and did some music theatre, which I loved, but that also wasn't for me. I just didn't fit there either. And I always say that it was only when I joined Fascinating Aida that I kind of found my spiritual home for a number of reasons, but yeah.
So you had a little bit of a clown?
Definitely.
This allows you to be a clown? I
mean, definitely.
I always think of opera as so... I don't know if I'm using the right word, but so austere and so... You have to take it seriously. You have to really know what's going on.
Well, you do. I mean, there are wonderful clowns in comedy, men and women. But I suppose the thing for me, I have a great love of opera. And I was a good opera singer and I had a good career. But I never felt that I could do what I needed to do with a song as an opera singer for a host of reasons. Language is one of them. For me, words are so important that if it isn't my language, no matter how well I understand the other language or no matter how well I've translated it, it's not the same as being... For me, I need to be on the word all the time. Mm. The marriage of the word and the music is what makes everything work for me. Mm. And whether that's comedy or whether that's making people cry, whatever it is. And I think for me, as an opera singer, I couldn't do that. There are opera singers who can do it, historically and today, and they're extraordinary. But it just wasn't... It wasn't quite for me.
Yeah. I mean, you're singing phonetically, even just not even really understanding.
I think because what you're required to do as an opera singer is slightly different. You know, you have to sing very often over an 80-piece orchestra. Your voice has to spin. It has to hit the back of your other half would know that, David. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to hit the back of the room. Yeah. And sometimes you have to sacrifice some stuff for that. And sometimes that's vowels, consonants, right. You know, all manner of things. Mm. And for me, I never wanted to sacrifice a word in order for my voice to be heard. I never wanted to make a pretty sound over making a sound that moved people to laugh or to cry. Mm. And so for me, that just wasn't ever going to be my métier. And I think also because with FA, I was allowed to do everything that I wanted to do. You know, I was a funny child. I was a funny performer. But I'm also a proper singer and I'm a proper musician. Yes. And I have a brain and I grew up with words around me. And so for me, FA was allowed me to do all of that and be in control of my own material in a way that you're just not when you're a a jobbing singer.
And how did you find each other? Like, how did were you? Did you just put? Did you know each other?
Or? No. I have a very, very old friend of mine called Michael Fitzgerald, who was responsible for the name Fascinating Aida in the first place. That's too circuitous a story to tell, but thank God. You don't have time. But also told me about the singer. He said, I've just been to see an evening with a pianist, composer friend of mine called Jason Carr. And he had this girl singing with him called Liza Pullman. And she was just lovely and so impressive. I said, where's her voice range? Because the Fascinating Aida's history with sopranos is very similar to Spinal Tap and drummers.
They explode.
They explode and choke on their own vomit, I hope. They've been a complete nightmare over the years. And they have a habit of, you know, of deciding to leave when it's all going really well. And I think it's that thing of actors always think, oh, there's a better job. I'm stuck now. I'm stuck and I've got to go out because Broadway beckons. Or the West End or... I don't know. So they leave. So I've always had my ear to the ground for a decent soprano who's funny. And and then when the moment came that we needed a decent soprano who was funny, I said, well, what's the name of that friend of yours? And she went, what? Oh, yes, Liza Pullman. I went, find her number immediately.
And here we are. How many years ago is that now?
18. 18. Just the 18.
Wow. All yet, no soprano had lasted more than 5 years up until that.
And can I just say, I don't know of any other sopranos now because I feel very secure.
Is Kim a soprano?
Oh, yes.
Sorry.
apart from your missus, I've only just been introduced to.
Sadly, for your missus, I'm not going anywhere. So.
Fair enough.
I describe myself as the longest suffering soprano in Fascinating Aida.
It does look like you guys have an absolute blast.
We're all Geminis as well, aren't we?
But so let's finish that rat question because I'm just so we get it all in.
Okay.
Adele, so tell us about you.
In my other life, as I like to refer to it, when I was younger, I was a cathedral chorister.
Okay.
I won't mention the cathedral, but the Russians came to view it.
And, not when she was there.
And I was the youngest and longest reigning head chorister that they had there. So that's where I really was taught to sing.
Okay.
And
how young do you start?
I went there when I was 8.
8, wow.
And then I left when I was 14. And then I went on to another school where I also sang.
Right.
And then... I gave up on God, and then I gave up on singing at the same time.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. And then I didn't start singing again till I was in my 20s because I needed to get an equity card. And one way to do it was to get a little residency. And so I had a residency in an East. I advertised in Melody Maker for a jazz trio. I fancied myself as a jazz singer, and this guy said, I'm not a musician, but I can fix it for you. So he got a trio together for me, and we had this residency. I used to listen to Ella Fitzgerald during the week and try and copy her scatting with varying degrees of success. some were quite successful, others not so.
Yeah. Whereabouts was the residency?
It was in Bethnal Green in London. And and then we turned up one Sunday to do the residency, and the pub was shut. And it was before the internet and mobile phones, so there was no way of finding out what had happened. It took us several weeks to find out that actually the guys who owned the pub had got the money to buy it by robbing Lloyd's Bank, and they'd been caught. So all their assets were seized, so that was the end of that. But by that time, I had my contracts, and I was able to get my equity card. And then fairly shortly after that, I was... spotted at the Donmar Warehouse. Well, I talked my way into doing a late night a spot at the, well, one song in a late night cabaret at the Donmar Warehouse. And Nika Burns who was Fascinating Ages director, you know, she ran the Doma.
Yeah.
And she liked what she heard and she asked me to audition and the rest is history.
Really. Wow. And how long ago was that?
That was in 1984 I joined.
1984. So that's just 1 year after.
Well, we started it March 83 and then we met
You'd already got through two members of Fascinating Ages.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, one fled to Canada. No, Lizzie, who was a very, very good friend of mine, her marriage broken up and she was quite sad. Then she got a job, and she was Canadian, she got a job at Stratford, Ontario. Yeah. So she said, I have to go. So she did. And then we were joined by a girl called Glenda, who had an absolutely lovely voice, but she didn't have a consonant in her head. There was nothing we could do to make her... She just had anything like that. And she was growing her fringe. And her fringe was
longer than Claudia Winkleman's.
Could you kind of like cut your fringe or pin it back? Because nobody can either see you or hear you. Because, you know, you're not showing your face. And you're not...
it was before Sia came along, you know, so... Yeah.
What was that?
Sia. You know, I don't know Sia, the Australian...
Sia. Right, I don't know. I don't
she
know.
Wears these weird masks over her eyes.
Well, and a wig
Sort
of comes
She doesn't
down.
Like anyone seeing her eyes when she sings. I think she's got a bit of an issue with it. She's got a tremendous voice, though, doesn't she?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
But every outfit she's got is some kind of weird headdress.
Oh, okay. I've been spared. that would quite annoy me. So Glenda had to go. We actually sacked her. And
Sacked her?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
Brutal.
We thought maybe it wasn't going to happen. Then we found, and Adele joined, and the rest.
Really, history.
Hell, it's history.
Well, I hope you don't mind us talking about it because I personally find it fascinating because I had having been part of a comedy trio when I started, which was in 1987, and we only lasted 10 years, and the fractious nature of the relationship, the working relationship to keep a trio together is actually extraordinarily difficult, and that's part of why I started this. Part of the conversation is it's admirable that, and when I say survived, it's amazing to maintain this kind of relationship, working happy, joyful working relationship, and where you can keep the comedy, where it keeps the comedy fun.
Yes, I think we all have in the end the same ethic, which is you go out there and you work your socks off, and let's you know they've paid. Let's give them a good time. And if we give them a good time, we have a good time. And then once we've had a good time on stage, we come off and we go, oh, wasn't that fun?
Yeah.
And let's do it again.
But we also have, I was saying earlier, you know, we're sort of slightly joking and saying we're all Geminis. So I always say there's six of us in dressing room at any one point. but we all do have, in our own ways, the same off-the-wall sense of humour. And that is how we approach writing and our work on stage. It's also what we're like in the van together. We share all the same points of references, apart from Sia, about music. we love, the three of us are I would say, unbelievably eclectic in our musical tastes. And we talk about it all the time. It's really what unites us hugely. So, I mean, of course, you're absolutely right. You know, certainly 39 years, you know, 18 years, it's a long time to be with, you know, with two other women whose birthdays are pretty close. You know, and so actually the things that, for me, the magic on the stage only happens if the magic is happening off the stage. The minute the magic doesn't happen off the stage, you've got nothing left. Mm-hmm. It's not like going out and playing Mother Courage. You can't just leave it behind you. It is about the magic that happens with the three of us. Mm. And that's something you have to nurture both on stage and off stage. Otherwise, it doesn't survive. And
you're basically living in a van together.
Yeah. And because we have to rewrite bits almost every day.
Ooh.
Definitely have to. Yeah. We have at the end song we rewrite every day. And sometimes there are very short songs, what we call the Bulgarian songs. And sometimes they have to be written. You might have to write three. Mm. I mean, they're only... There's a little clarity, really, to music, but sometimes they've got four lines and a rush of blood to the head. either, you know, it's just trying to write two hilarious lines. It's almost as hard as writing a full song. Mm-hmm. Now we've got a lot of templates that we can use. I've got more, I suppose, organised and scientific about it. And having to, when you're tired and you've had a rubbish breakfast, and the pillows have been like boulders just a hotel, another view of the car park.
That's always my room, always.
But then again, last night you played the Royal Festival Hall.
Yes,
you did.
So the highlight would be, you must have been buzzing after that show.
I was tired. I hadn't slept very well. And I was around with my partner. And he was just being a pig.
you might cut that out.
We can edit around.
No, don't cut it out. and so I was kind of tired and nervous when I arrived. And so I just sort of, it was one of those things. I got through it. And I was very nervous.
Well, I can tell you it didn't show.
Yeah, of course.
Marvelous decision.
Do you get nervous? You still get nervous after all this time?
Yeah, I mean, even the show's in our bones, the festival hall is a big deal.
It's
one of the three premier venues in this country.
Sure.
The festival hall, the Palladium, and the Albert Hall. And yeah. I think of those kind of like, of all of them, the festival hall has, for me, kind of a cultural prestige, which is just, I mean, it's where I go to see people like Randy Newman or Ashkenazi or Baron Boyne or Martha
Argerich.
Sandy
Toksvig.
And it's where I go, because I really love Mihai culture. Mm. And so for me to play there was just... I was kind of speechless.
Really, I don't get nervous if I've got the girls with me. If I ever do solo stuff to a much, much, much smaller audience,
yeah.
I do get nervous then because it's all down to me.
Yeah.
But if I go a bit wrong, somebody will help me out.
Sure.
So, which is fine. And actually, the audience love it if you go wrong as well.
Isn't it true? Yeah.
That is true.
I mean, that bottom...
Provided you acknowledge that you've done it.
My bassists normally hate me because we'll be going through a set and we'll get to a song and 95% of the time, despite the fact I've sung this song 1,000 times, I will be going into it and I'll forget the first line of the song. So they'll just have to play it over and over again, and then I'll have to ask the bassist.
Last night we were at the festival hall, as you said, and came on. We do a song at the beginning of Act Two called "Suddenly New Zealand," which is very wordy, and we've rewritten it about 70,000 times over the years.
To update it.
And last night, I was just enjoying myself very much, and it was all going terribly well. And then I sang a lyric from version 23 in 19 wherever, and then I thought, I don't know what the next word is, so I sang something else that rhymed, and then there's another one, and I just went and I sang, I don't know what the words are. And then I turned to Michael, our pianist, Michael Ralston, who's amazing, and I said, I'm sorry, I have no idea what the next words are. And he gave me the words, and then I said, are they? Are those really the words? It was really funny. And as Adele said, actually, it got a huge laugh, and it was completely fine. And I never mind that. It's always difficult. It's interesting. I have a song in the second half, which is about the woke culture, which we've written very much as a character, dealing with what it is to deal with the path of woke between two people that you love, a son who's representing the future of what it is to be woke, and a mother who is stuck in the past going, ah, and she's in the middle going, how do I reconcile these two things? Mm-hmm. If I forget the words in that song, I couldn't make it work in the same way because she's a character. When it's me on stage, I have no problem with it because then I know how to handle it because it's me, Liza Pullman, I'm on the stage, I can make people laugh and I can get around it. But when you're doing a character song, that's a whole different ballgame. You don't want to forget the words in a song like that.
No.
What's your process when you're writing songs in general? Is who... Do you write the melodies?
Yes. What it is somebody will say... You'll post something on Facebook about how you had to wait for a bus for 2 hours because there was a breakdown, and somebody says, oh, I bet you'll be writing a song about that, to which the answer is no. Fuck off. There's not a song in everything. So what we do now is we take a subject, and I always say it's like a sculptor's block of stone. You kind of walk around the subject for hours and we discuss it and we wrangle it and we just say, what do we think about this? And, you know, for instance, when we were rewriting Suddenly New Zealand, it was we wrote it initially post 9/11, and very funny thing about how, you know, one is terrified of, you know, people trying to assassinate large numbers of us, and there were all sorts of stuff. So I said the three new subjects we need to write are COVID, because it's about the horrible things that happen to us all, and that threaten us all. It's about COVID. It's about dictators, you know, using the pandemic to stifle our liberty, and food shortages, food insecurity. Those are the three huge subjects, and so it's really trying to cram all that into very short syllables. So we'll talk about it, talk about it, talk about it. And we'll research, and we'll sit there with three computers going, oh, did you know that rice, maize, and wheat, they're half of everything that we eat? Oh, well, that's good. Put that down, put down. So that's how we do it. We'll go round and round. We chip away at our block of stone. Mm. And eventually we get to a way of approaching it, and then we start writing the song.
I will say, though, the one thing that Dilly doesn't quite say there is that I think she has a sort of, her superpower, her spidey sense, is her ability to know what will make a good song. Mm. And it isn't just saying a song about the bus queue isn't going to make a good song. It's the opposite of that. She knows what will make a good song, and that's where we begin. Mm. She will come in and say, I've got this idea for a song, and that's where the process starts. And that in itself is 50% of what then has to happen, because that's what's key, is understanding what people are going to want and respond to.
I think the stakes that you mentioned there as well, though, when you're thinking about them, the stakes are really, really high, as in the subject matter of each of the things, the stake is quite high in what you're saying. It affects everybody. You've just said about dictators, food shortages. They're really, really big topics.
Big, and
they're
so important. Yes.
Absolutely, they're so important. But you treat them so delicately, lightly, and then you can, whilst saying a really important message with them, you turn it round, and it's hilarious. So I don't know how what I'm trying to say, but you've managed to make something that is so important, so fun, as well. I'm thinking in particular. There's Adele. There's a song that you sing, and it is, it's beautiful. I think I cried the first time that I heard it. It's the one about being in a cage. Is that not in a cage? Being a prisoner.
Prisoner of gender.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Could you please tell our listeners a little bit about the song?
Well, the Prisoner of Gender is about my growing up as a trans woman, and actually Dilly had suggested that we write about it years ago, but it was rather strange because when I first joined the group, I shouldn't go into all the buildings of what happened, but basically I was outed quite soon by the newspapers, and we decided that the best tack to take was, oh, it's not relevant, we're a three-woman group, and, you know, and go away, and that's the end of it.
And when was that, darling? That was
1984. So that's basically what we did.
Yeah. But and also because, you know, you were an unusual phenomenon then.
Yes.
And it was tough.
It was.
It was very tough.
And it was tough. And may I just say also at the time that Dilly has been the most staunchest ally, and she's had to put up with a lot of shit at that point on my behalf, you know, programmes that didn't want us on.
Really?
Oh yeah, because I was in the group, and she never, you know, she stuck by me.
You didn't need to know then.
It all kind of went away. So we, you know, nobody really bothered about it. And then Dilly suggested years later that, you know, maybe now was the time. And I went, oh, no, I don't think so. But it was actually when when the Chechenian president started killing, rounding people, gay people up and killing them, I thought, well, I'm here in a very privileged position. So I performed it. We wrote it then.
I remember saying, let's just write it and see what it's like. And then if you hate it, I promise you I won't make you sing it.
And what year is this, just to be
2015, was it? 2000? Was it? I think it was. We did it in Edinburgh in
2014,
I think, probably.
Yeah.
Right.
And we did it for a while, and it was great. And it got, it was very, very well accepted. And then something more interesting happened to me, which is what I got cancer. So we wrote a song about that instead, a funny song about that. And so that seemed to be more interesting at the time. But then we brought it back this time because it's got so toxic now. It seemed like trans people were on an upward trajectory and it was all going to be fine.
They still are.
And yeah, but they were going to reform the Gender Recognition Act and everything was lovely, lovely. And then all this toxicity started coming from the American evangelists and from the right-wing media, and even now from the government.
That's just in the last couple of weeks, isn't it?
And I feel that a lot of young trans people see that their chances of being able to get treatment and things are being taken away from them.
Yeah, right.
As we know, rights can come and they can be rolled back. Look what's happening in America at the moment with abortion rights, or it has happened in Poland. So you can never take anything for granted.
No.
I feel it's important now that other trans women, and men, in fact, I've had a lot of men come up about it, can see that you can, and also parents of trans children can see that being trans does not condemn you to a very unhappy life. You can be happy and successful.
And it's such a gentle song. It just says, this is who I am. And take it or leave it, but we have a right to exist.
Well, what's so great about it is that the other two come in and join me at the end. So you get...
Tell everybody that everybody is.
Everybody, the possibilities are endless. And I think that's very important. It's not just my song.
No, it's a solidarity.
Yes.
And actually, you were saying earlier, weren't you, the thing about, we take a serious subject and we make people laugh. And the thing I always feel standing behind you when you're singing it, obviously it's incredibly moving, that goes without saying. But in the early days when we were performing it in, some such place in suburbia in the middle of nowhere, that you were just a bit like, oh God, okay, let's give it a go, fingers crossed, let's go. I think what was wonderful about it was it disarmed people. So rather than for people who might not have been able to deal with that subject at that point before, whose shields would have just gone up, it disarmed people so that they were able to hear it and to understand it and to take it on board, so that by the end of the song, they've come on that journey with you and with us as we join you at the front of the stage. I think that is something that a song can do that perhaps standing up and reciting a speech or giving a talk might not do as successfully.
Mm. Also, yeah, I've been making them laugh up until that point anyway, so they've got to know me in the show.
Yes, and it's also that moments like then came the dreadful day when I hit puberty, hence this music, Sorrowful and Schuberty. It punctures the self-importance of any sense of not so self-importance, of self-pity. Because that's one thing, that self-pity is one of the most unattractive things to see on stage. You just want to go, please go away. Moments like that puncture any sense of that. And so people are just going, oh, right, that's quite funny. I saw something was burgeoning. I found a surgeon who could do some surgeoning, which is outrageously bad in many ways. But, but it's sort of, again, it's that thing of...
And also, if in doubt, have it off. It's not quite what you would say normally.
But it's very true that if it was said as a speech...
Yes.
Then everybody would have their guard up,
and
people would have a chance to get angry about it, and it would be completely different. But the fact that there's a laugh in between every one of these little snippets that you're dropping in your guard is completely down, and you can get a message.
Well, to be honest, we get away with absolute murder, you know, because you know, I mean, we say all manner of shite on stage that we'd never be allowed to say anywhere else, you know, because we're singing it in three-part harmony. We're three delightful-looking ladies of un certain âge, wearing very nice outfits.
Mine,
you know,
is very subtle.
You know, who with very nice accents, who speak well and use a lot of words, and people go, "Oh my God, did they just say that? Oh my God!" And actually, rather than, I mean, we might have one little seat pop up as they leave the auditorium, but it doesn't really happen. You know, people stay. People of all persuasions, politically and, you know, generally how they feel about the world, stay and listen to what we have to say. And I think that is perhaps what, you know, we're sitting in this room with these amazing stand-up comics, but I always think it's in many ways easier for us to get to people because we have music.
Yeah.
We get to people who don't agree with us politically.
Yeah.
Are you subversive by choice? The beauty of it is you're not sure whether it's just because that's what you find funny and that's what you want, you just want to make people laugh, or are you using this, your stage and your platform to make and say things that you find are really truly need to change?
Absolutely. I passionate about our our politics.
There you go.
And our ethics. Right. And yeah, absolutely. So. It's a fundamental thing.
And we are united. I mean, that's the other thing when we were talking earlier about what unites us.
Yeah.
That is also, you know, that is absolutely...
Even though I'm
key.
A Liberal Democrat.
Almost elected.
Well, I almost got elected. Yes.
Really? Yeah. That, I mean, that would have changed... Would you still...
That would have changed everything. I didn't vote for her, that's for certain.
I was the vote patsy, you know. I am also a Lib Dem who voted for Corbyn in the last election because there was absolutely no point in voting. I'm a tactical voter, but I would march on Downing Street with staves at the moment. I'm so angry.
Oh yeah,
about
well that's without saying. You're speaking to the converted on that one, because of the nature of your show, and the sequence and the sort of lightness of the performance, or the humility of the performance. The politics aren't. They're not like, it's not like it's similar to Tim Minchin does a similar thing. He's able to use his. He's a very political boy. Completely. I mean, it's, you know, his songs about fuck the Pope and you know. He's so generous about it. He's telling you what to do.
Yeah,
he's
not
just
preaching.
These are just ideas we have about it.
But I do think we have in my time with FA. I do think we have gotten more and more and more political as we've gone on.
Good.
I think you would agree with that. I think over the years we've. Mm. I think it's partly that thing of getting older and just going, oh, who gives a fuck? Let's just, you know. Do you know what I mean? You get to a point where you think, you know, 39 years, 40 years next year. You know, we're all, you know, cracking on. Let's just do it. Let's just say what we think. And if we can do it and make people laugh at the same time, then bonus.
Yes, and also, I don't know if you see the reception of that is going to actually embolden you to say more because the people enjoy or sharing that with you. Oh. Even a simple songs like a song about dogging or the songs that are seen...
very political dogging.
Yeah, but
very
But even the concept of doing a song about it is political in this...
Yeah.
Through modern
particularly
optics.
To our audiences.
Well, yes, exactly. And I know you're making fun. You're going, the older people enjoying it, whatever. But that is what you're making it. You're discussing. You're going places with ideas that other people don't do. And you are
I
right.
I call it my ball and chain, I have to say.
Really?
Rat and cheap flights. You'll have
cheap
to sing
flights.
Forever.
Oh, that's your ball and chain.
They're both my ball and chain.
Because they were successful.
So you can never, ever do a show without them.
People will feel very short-changed.
Wait a minute, that's like the Rolling Stones not doing Satisfaction.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is.
I mean, they start their concert with Start Me Up and they end it with Satisfaction. Even though they'll never be able to get away from that.
So. I mean, if you ask Van Morrison to sing Brown Eyed Girl, he will just walk off stage.
Well, that's Van Morrison.
Yeah,
that's
back.
Van Morrison. Yes, and he's a bad-tempered git.
And he's an anti-vaxxer.
Is he?
Oh, is he?
Yeah, horrible. Oh. Have you heard his new songs? They're actually about the New World Order.
Depressing.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. No.
His new album is about how Bill Gates is trying to kill us.
Oh,
it's really,
no.
really sad. My middle name is Morrison. I was named after him. Mm. And I
not after
love
the grocery
his music.
Store.
No, not after the grocery
excellent
store.
Grocery store.
It's after Jim Morrison.
Oh, no, there you go.
Yeah, that's very true. This morning, I went via my parents' house. But as I went there, I was playing a couple of your songs to show my dad. And I was playing Cheap Flights to him. And he went, "But David, you do know what feck means, don't you?"
His dad's hilarious. His dad are the nicest people in the world.
I said, "Yes, Dad. Yes, I do." He's like, "Oh, that's good, because I was told what that meant about 10 years ago, and you know, it did shock me a little." I thought, "Oh my God, you should come and see the show."
Just a way of Catholic Ireland getting to say fuck without it being sounding like fuck.
Yes. He did. He used to come and see the Ruby Darlings, which was my cabaret act that I used to do with a couple of my friends, and it did quite well, but we had shocking songs about anal sex and things like this. You know, we really, really went all in. Mm-hmm. And somebody did once walk up to my mum in this in the garden centre and had seen my mum was at the gig, and just walked up to her ear and went, "Say no to anal," and just started singing it to her in the middle of the shop. And
I bet they couldn't be prouder.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, it was
yeah.
Lily Phillips and...
What? Lily Phillips and Rachel.
Yeah, and it was a feminist cabaret show. Similarly, taking sort of feminist politics to a level where they're in sparkly, almost like sexy,
I was in a sparkly onesie.
Sexy outfits, but also making their politics and very clear about...
You probably got it from us.
Well, it would have been a huge influence. It was a big influence, absolutely.
So we needed to wind down because you need to go and you need to eat something and you're performing tonight. We normally ask the people that we interview to perform something.
You do a lovely rendition of Happy Birthday.
It is my birthday tomorrow.
No, is it?
It is. Yeah. It is indeed. Yeah.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
But it's mine on Monday.
Is it?
Is it?
Oh, yes, because you're Gemini.
You're 70.
Really?
What are you doing for your 70?
I'm playing Southend. That's what I'm saying. Oh, no. Southend, yeah.
She is. Southend, of the pier.
And no. I don't know what they're going to do to me on stage. I just dread it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're going out to the Piper Port afterwards.
We are.
Right. And we're going with Jack Monroe.
Oh, is she coming?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, with her pal, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. That's nice.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
And do you guys normally, because you're all in the same month-ish, do you have a joint birthday party? Or do you?
No, one of the happiest joint things was that Adele took Dilly and I to see a wonderful German singer called Max Raab at the Shepherd's Bush Empire. I'd never seen him. I'd heard him, but I'd never seen him perform live before. And he comes with his Palast Orchestra, and they do stuff from the Weimar Republic. He's absolutely sublime. And that was one of the only times I think we celebrated. It was a sort of joint birthday present.
We should do that again. We should do
yeah,
that.
We should do.
Then there was the time we went to see the Seekers.
Oh,
that
God.
Was almost as emotional.
Oh, God. I forgot about that.
It's the 50th anniversary.
We had been going, and I said, Judith had a brain aneurysm.
Oh, my God. They're going to end with them.
Oh, no. It was delayed for a year, wasn't
yes.
it?
Wow.
They're going to end with the carnival is over. Oh, I can't believe it. I should have been dressed in beige, really.
So I don't know if we do. What could we sing? Can we sing anything?
We could sing a Bulgarian.
The HS2 is what we need, what we need, what we need. To travel to Birmingham with greater speed, greater speed, greater speed. It'll cost 109 billion, but it'll save 20 minutes. Great.
Fantastic.
Fascinating.
So thank you so much for joining us on Songs in the Key of Laugh and with David and I. It's an honor to speak to you.
Thank you so much.
I hope you have a fantastic show tonight.
And enjoy. I hope you enjoy it.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, we'll see you afterwards.
Because you've got to stay now.
Oh, yeah, we're going to. Oh, yeah. We're going to sing along.
Well, you'll know one of the Bulgarians anyway. Yes.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye. Adios. Farewell. You'll be glad to hear that we think that your interview went well. But we have other things to get on with now, so you're going to have to go. I'm sure our paths will cross again, but whoever really knows? It's been fun, it's been musical, it's been comical at times. But now we have to leave you, so goodbye. Goodbye!
That was fascinating, Aida.
And our second sort of in-person interview, because most of our interviews take place over Zoom, but we actually got to go to the St. Albans Theatre and meet them in the bar.
The only other one that we've done was with Rich Hall in his shed.
In his shed.
Which was so cool.
I think as we move forward with the Songs in the Key of Laugh, we'll be doing more in-person interviews, so that could become more fun and exciting for us.
But that was such a wonderful experience and such an amazing show to watch afterwards.
So
as
that
well.
Almost ends our second series, although we do have the bonus episode of our musical, which...
The bonus episode.
The bonus monsoon episode. But until that time, yeah. If you'd like to see more or hear more from Fascinating Aida, why not visit them at their website, www.fascinatingaida.co.uk. for their tour dates.
And please send us in your songs for the Songs in the Key of Laugh Comedy Song Competition Series 3.
And if you'd like to support our podcast, go to patreon.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh or coffee.com/songsinthekeyoflaugh.
Listen out for that bonus episode, guys. It's going to be coming in your ears very, very, very soon.
And until that time,
bye!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.